Hi, I'm Sharon Davis, Chief Executive of Young Enterprise, and welcome to our podcast series, Transforming Futures. I'll be talking with special guests from many different walks of life, all of whom have fascinating life experiences and a shared commitment to helping young people build successful futures. We explore how the powerful chemistry of support and opportunity have shaped their own lives, getting their individual takes on future skills needed across a range of sectors, and what more we can do as a society to help young people build and apply those skills. My guest today is Dr. Patrick Roach, General Secretary of the NASUWT, the Teachers Union, which is focused on putting teachers first and provides protection, benefits and support for teachers across the UK, including professional advice, legal support and professional development. Patrick has worked for the NASUWT since 1998 and was appointed as General Secretary in April 2020, following a decade as Deputy General Secretary. He holds a PhD in educational research and was formerly a teacher of politics and sociology in further education, as well as a researcher and lecturer in education, social policy, inequalities in higher education. Patrick, I'm very excited to talk to you today. Welcome to Transforming Futures.
Thank you very much.
So let's just jump straight in. My first question is one I ask all of our guests. At Young Enterprise, we often talk about the chemistry of support and opportunity, literally having the power to transform someone's future. What does that sentence mean to you personally?
Gosh, well, that's a biggie, really. Ultimately, support and opportunity, well, that's the chemistry of education, isn't it? And, you know, what schools do each and every day. I mean, for me personally, you know, that reflects my background, what made me the person that I am, that earliest experience, both of family, but also of education, opening up the vista of opportunity, really opening up the world, giving me the opportunities to become the person that I am. I mean, nothing's more important for me than the power of education, the work of teachers each and every day. That's been part of my experience, my life story, that earliest advice, that earliest support received from great teachers, as well as the opportunity really to discover, you know, where my interests lay as a young person, but obviously moving on into further and higher education and into the world of work.
And reflecting on that journey today, just looking at your CV, it's varied, and you've clearly been impacted by those first experiences of education. Can you just share a couple of moments where opportunity and support has shaped and influenced your life, and perhaps what life might have looked like if you'd not benefited from those moments?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, for me, one of the critical moments in my educational career was a moment which I think for too many young people, this sense of not achieving what they wanted to achieve at the end of their school career, perhaps seeing themselves in some shape or form as having failed at school. My story is a story of second chance, that opportunity to go into further education and to be amongst students who perhaps looked a bit more like me, but also to be with teachers and lecturers that saw me for the person that I am and who actually believed in me and felt that, you know, that drove me on to do even better. Finally, the rest of that was moving on, as I say, into university and beginning to discover the career opportunities that were available to me. For me, that moment, that opportunity to be with those teachers who had the time and the courage to say, Patrick, you can do whatever you want to do, and we're here to support you.
I hear you saying the courage to say you can do and be anything you want to. It sounds like you also had that support from your family. So that chemistry of the two coming together, it sounds like that was really impactful.
Yeah, I mean, nothing in my story means anything without my parents and my wider family network. I mean, I'm second generation black in this country. And, you know, my parents and my grandparents came to this country to do their bit as part and parcel of that Windrush generation that we often hear about. I mean, when I think about the courage that they showed in making that journey and in settling here in the UK, often against the odds, often when they were facing hostility, but who put down their roots, and who said to me and to my brother, work hard, study hard, and, you know, we'll be there to support you, whatever it is that you do. Without that underpinning support, I very much doubt that, you know, I'd be where I am today. That's, I think, a given. That intersection of family, but also of school and college, made a real difference. And yes, there were setbacks. Yes, you know, I faced hostility too. Yes, I had some teachers who felt that, you know, the opportunities, the potential that I had in life would be limited. But there were other teachers who felt differently, and frankly, who didn't feel constrained to be saying, well, here's a student who we should just view as another statistic, another number, another set of results in a group of students who studied for their, you know, their O levels in my day in terms of what they might achieve. For me, it was teachers who said, drive you on to do even better. And, you know, that intersection between school and family life really did make a power of difference in my life.
And I can hear you, and I look at your career. I mean, obviously, your work ethic is coming through really strong, whether that is from your family, your resilience. I mean, they must be incredibly proud now.
Yeah, I think they are. But I'm proud of them as well for, you know, continuing to support me. I mean, you do nothing in life. I mean, one of the earliest stories or lessons, if you will, that my parents taught me was, be the best that you can be and aspire to whatever it is that you want, but that you'll never achieve anything in life by yourself. In terms of my upbringing, it was always an upbringing where we was more important than me, where belonging to a strong family, belonging in a strong community, being part of something bigger was always so crucially important. And I think that has been a framework, a maxim that has continued to guide me through my life. Hence, I'm here now as a leader of a teachers' trade union, where the we is just as, if not more important, the we is more important than the me, where collectively we make a difference, where collectively we can realise ambitions, our aspirations for a better life for teachers and lecturers, but also a better life and opportunity for the students that my members teach.
And I can hear that intersection of family, school, community really coming together that's driven you. It feels like it's driven you throughout your career. I'm going to come to, I guess, some of the challenges that the teaching profession are currently facing right now. But I'd just like to spend a little bit of time looking ahead, if I may, looking at the future of the teaching profession, whether you feel that there are changes that you anticipate happening in the future when it comes to the teaching sector, and perhaps what skills you think will be more important for the teaching sector in the next 10 years?
Well, I do think that one of the qualities of our teachers that we need now and we will need in the future is the quality of compassion, of caring for students. And I don't mean becoming social workers. I'm talking about teachers as educators. We nurture future generations. And that takes time. That takes a certain set of skills. That takes a particular kind of disposition. And great teachers demonstrate that each and every single day, provided they're given the scope, the time, the opportunity to do just that. So for me, that will be a set of skills and dispositions that we will require of teachers going forwards. We saw that, I think, particularly at the height of the COVID pandemic, when schools were generally closed to children and young people. Teachers focused on the relationships with their students. They focused on ensuring that they remained in touch with their students. They focused on creativity, that whilst they might have been separated from their students, that they remained in touch as part and parcel of their students' education and their ongoing progression. So I think we will always need that. But I'm pretty sure that many listeners to this podcast will be saying, well, what about technology? You know, what about AI and its power to transform our education system? Shouldn't we be embracing this? Do we need all the teachers that we have currently within our schools? I think we do. I think that technology has to be a tool for teachers and indeed for learners, but it's important that we're equipping teachers to be able to embrace that technology and to use it in a way which is powerful and transformational for children's education, not to replace the work of teachers, but to complement the work of teachers and to be driven by the work of teachers themselves as they continue to support children's education.
And absolutely, and to be able to utilise those educational approaches in ways that benefit their learners, because they know them better than anybody, arguably.
Absolutely. But education is and should always be a people industry. It is about the relationship between teacher and student. And that's what's critically important. It is about pedagogy. Of course it is. Whether you're a teacher of, you know, the social sciences like myself, or you're a teacher of maths, or the natural sciences, or English and the humanities, or PE, or design and technology, you need to understand your subject and you need to be able to demonstrate a passion for your subject. But the way in which you connect students to a love of learning for your subject is about the relationships and the quality of relationships that exist between teachers and their students. For me, the biggest concern is whether teachers have the time to develop those relationships. You know, with larger and larger class sizes, with greater and greater workload pressures on teachers, with a greater expectation on schools to do more at the heart of children's lives, quite often teachers are lacking that space, are lacking the opportunity to make those connections. And we need to fight to ensure that teachers are given that time, they are given that space to build those relationships with their students in order that their students can become great learners of the future.
I was actually going to come to some of the significant challenges that we hear from teachers that they're facing on a day-to-day basis. We work very closely with teachers at Young Enterprise, and arguably the teaching profession is at the very heart of building the UK's future capability and capacity. So what more as a society do you think that we can do to support teachers together?
Well, it's a choice for us as a nation, as a society. The choice is how much do we want to value our young people? And for me, our young people are the country's greatest asset. And we need to see, as a society, our willingness to invest much more in the talent, the creativity, the potential of our young people. And that's about how we invest in schools, how we invest in schools and colleges, but also it is about how we invest in children, young people and families, how we create that wraparound of support for children and young people throughout their lives, whether they are in school or outside of school. You know, I remember when I was growing up, the amazing opportunities that I discovered both in school but outside of school, visiting my local library and finding, you know, just a world of knowledge, a world of insight, a world of literature that, frankly, I would not have found simply at home, and that I perhaps would not have discovered by slavishly following the next page in the curriculum. We need to create that space and that opportunity in schools with more investment, but also outside of schools, enriching children and young people's lives each and every day.
And I think we share a passion for community engagement. As an old youth worker myself, I know that you've worked with young people who've experienced significant barriers and exclusion, engaging parents and local communities. I was wondering whether you could share your experiences in terms of what works to engage and inspire, I guess, young people who feel outside of education or don't feel successful in learning. What do you see that's worked, and how might we seek to scale some of that?
Yeah, I think a big part of that is recognising that not only the value of every single child, but also the story for every child and young person. And children and young people are very different and too often are defined, are labelled in ways which are not only very restrictive, but actually ignore that huge diversity that exists. Growing up as a young black boy in this country and discovering my own sense of self-worth was just as important as, you know, discovering the works of Shakespeare or, you know, learning the next formula or equation in maths or in science. So understanding myself as a black student was really important. And one of the things that I went on to do was to work in the supplementary school movement as a volunteer, because, yes, the formal curriculum in schools was doing a lot, but it wasn't doing enough to develop a sense of pride and belief and sense of place, a sense of belonging for young black students. Now, I think today the curriculum has been transformed, but it needs to be transformed even further to really demonstrate that we value inclusion within our society and within our education system. So I think a big part of this starts with understanding and recognizing and valuing the young person as a young person. We need to start from the position of who that young person is, and we need then to build from there. You know, if kids are growing up in poverty, if they're growing up in transient households, if they're coming to school hungry, if they're concerned about their safety at home, we need to connect with that. We need a system which recognises that, which connects with that, and which supports children to navigate, you know, the issues which are impacting on them in their day-to-day lives. That's part of the role that schools can perform. But as I say, it's a crucially important role that wider services, those wraparound services for children, young people and families, also need to be there to provide that support. Too often, those services have frankly disappeared because of choices that have been made about what's important in terms of funding, about how much funding should be provided to schools and to other services, or in the drive to cut back on public spending, which is all to the detriment of young people generally, but especially to those young people who have the least.
And listening to you, I'm struck by what you said about self-worth and thinking about my own career as a youth worker and seeing young people really thrive in different learning environments, perhaps outside of school. Self-worth was a really big factor enabling them to rediscover, if you like, or re-engage with education. You described being a young black male and being really being able to get in touch with self-worth. How did you make that connection? What was it that switched that on for you?
There are so many examples that I could draw on, and not all of them happened outside of the school gates.
Okay.
Some of them happened within the school. Having access to a broad and balanced curriculum, perhaps I didn't realise that at the time, but actually it kept me in school. It actually kept me coming to school on a daily basis because I was able to discover things that, frankly, I had never discovered before. For example, art and music in particular, being able to learn to play a musical instrument and to be able to read music, things that I'd never encountered before. You know, as a second generation black boy growing up in England, you'd probably think to yourself, well, surely you were surrounded by music. And yes, I was, both at home and, of course, you know, my parents used to drag me along to church every single week and we sang and so on and so forth. But actually discovering myself through, for example, a love of art and music was extremely powerful in keeping me in learning. Now, what I worry about today, for too many young people, those opportunities simply aren't there. That access to a broad and balanced curriculum is being denied to too many young people. And I'm not trying to pretend here. I'm not trying to say that somehow just give kids a bit of music or a couple of lessons of art each week will tackle the huge crisis we've got of young people being absent from school. But actually, unless we ensure that every child has that guaranteed access, that entitlement to that broad and balanced curriculum, then how are you going to discover who you are? What actually connects you with learning? What actually gives you the encouragement to get up each morning and to be in school? Because actually, unless you're in school, you're not actually able to access some of those opportunities that are really making a difference to you in your own life. So it begins in schools, without a doubt. But we also need to create opportunities beyond that. You know, I've spoken about digital, about the role of technology, about AI. But, you know, connecting young people digitally is also important. Yet for too many young people, particularly from the poorest backgrounds, access to technology is denied to them. And yet technology is all around us. It's a part of our everyday lives. We need to create equality of opportunity for all learners, whether they're in school or indeed in terms of the support structures that we create around schools as well.
And that's a powerful, powerful call to action. I'm just thinking now, alongside teachers, alongside education, is there a role for employers? And if so, what role is that in terms of helping young people access that support and opportunity?
Well, I know that employers do have a habit of asking the question of schools, you know, what more can you do to provide to us the employees of the future who will be ready to hit the ground running? I often hear that. But I think it's important that employers too take their share of responsibility. I think the whole of society has to take that share of responsibility. You know, that old maxim, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, it does. And it takes parents and the home, a stable family background. It takes, you know, the work of our educators in our schools. It takes those wider services for children, young people and families. But it also takes employers to step up to the plate and to support the work of schools as well. You know, one of those areas might be, for example, how we develop a rich set of opportunities for every learner to be able to access work placement opportunities, just as one example of that. For too many young people, their horizons are limited by what they know or by what their parents or immediate family know, rather than thinking about the huge range of possibilities that exist out there in terms of the kinds of careers that they might wish to build for themselves for their futures. Getting that opportunity to hear from employers directly, to hear from those who are working in different parts of industry and commerce, in the finance sector, in technology, in the political sphere, in trade unions, to actually hear about what is that work? How does it make a difference? Because some of that will connect with young people in ways that perhaps we can't predict, and for some young people in ways that many of us couldn't possibly imagine. We need those opportunities, and that for me is a really important, a vital contribution that employers can make.
And I've got a question here from a teacher. You know that we work very closely with teachers and we invited them to ask you a question, and I think it's a good one. Are there any specific mindsets young people should adopt to succeed in future career paths?
And that's coming from a teacher. Well, that's an interesting question, I have to say. A specific mindset. I think a large part of this is about how young people see themselves. When I was leaving my secondary school career, I do remember, because it's almost seared into my memory, hearing from some of my teachers, and it was a minority, but some of my teachers who said, you know, well, What more could you expect? Perhaps you now need to go off and find a job or learn a trade, because, you know, you're never going to get on to university. I have to say my parents were outraged by that, as I was very saddened by that. But I didn't give up, and my parents wouldn't allow me to give up, but I didn't give up and I didn't give in. And I found, as I went into further education, there were teachers who felt and thought and acted very differently to that. So I think that mindset is about never giving up and never giving in. That mindset is about seeing yourself and your possibilities. I think that mindset is about connecting with others around you, your peers, your family and carers, but others as well, who can be there to mentor you, who can be there to inspire you to continue. Because learning is a battle for many young people. It was a battle for me. You might not think it. He's a guy with a PhD. It was a battle for me to continue my education. But I did so because I believed that there was a set of possibilities for me that I could realise if I continued in my learning journey. And that's precisely what I did. And that's exactly what every young person should do. It's not about going to university for everybody. Absolutely not. Don't get me wrong. But it is about saying that you should never be defined by others. And you should never give up because others tell you that you should do so. And you should never give in. If you believe there is something better that you can achieve, that we can achieve, then you should fight for that and continue working towards that goal.
And you bring me beautifully to my last question, Patrick, and it's really about what more we can do to raise young people's awareness of teaching really as the future-changing career that it can be.
I think a large part of that is how we value education and the work of our teachers. Because if we've got, and we have got, great teachers across our profession, they need to be properly valued and they need to be respected. And with that, I think that lifts the heads of teachers, but also of the students that they teach. So we need to value the work of our teachers. We need to give teachers the space and the time to build those relationships, to make those connections with their students. Because I also think that if students can understand the person that the teacher is, then that will raise the esteem of the teaching profession, just as teachers needing to understand the person that their student is as well. So it's really important that we connect with the work of teachers, that we value the work of teachers, that we support the efforts of our teachers, because if we secure better for our teachers, that will inevitably mean better for the students that they teach.
Well, sadly, Patrick, I have another 185 questions for you for today, but sadly, we've come to the end of our episode. Thank you so much for reminding us all just what an invaluable contribution our teachers continue to make and have made, certainly over the pandemic. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you. Also, the importance of connectivity, the contribution of community. Thank you for sharing your own insights on what we can do to support teachers, as well as highlighting to young people better awareness of the brilliant future-changing career that teaching is. Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you very much.
Next week, I'll be speaking with Rob Marcus, Consumer Experience Senior Director at Colgate Palmolive, about why you'll always need effort and hard work, as well as support and opportunity. He's also got a great framework for problem solving. So look out for that podcast, which will be available next week.